Welcome, and thank you for making the time to join us this morning on Alive 90.5. It's so lovely that we can speak to somebody about our Cancer Council. Biggest morning tea and how you got involved. So if I can just share quickly with our listeners, last week we had our light year in the station live on air, and we raised $1,635. Currently, wow, we are sitting on $2,138. So I've raised it from 1,000 to 3,000. So we're going to keep going until we can get there. So please, listeners, you can still donate. Jump on our Facebook page and you can get involved and see how the difference you can make. So I then asked Cancer Council if they could send me an ambassador to have a chat with. This is my fifth year that I'm doing the Biggest Morning Tea. And more than ever, I have a bigger reason, because before I used to just wanted to do to help people, and that's what my heart is. But this year, my why is my mum. We hear lots of breast cancer, and brain tumours. But my mum has got a neuroendocrine cancer. And I'm sure, Catherine, you know all about that. And she's 82 in a few days' time. She's a pretty healthy, fit woman and always done the right thing, but never, ever did they pick this up in all of her tests that she's done. Anyway, we find ourselves with this. So family and friends go through as much as the patient do. So, Catherine, we come to you. How did you get involved? And, you know, as an ambassador, what is your role?
Yes. Well, first, Julianne, can I just say thank you so much for all of your work supporting Cancer Council and for asking me to come along today. It's a real pleasure to get to talk to you and all of your listeners. So as an ambassador, I attend community events as a volunteer to basically try to raise awareness about cancer and the ways to support those who are living through a cancer diagnosis. And this is done, I guess, on a personal level through sharing my own experience of having a loved one with cancer and how that impacted on my life, but also through sharing about the amazing work of Cancer Council from their support programs through to their research.
That's wonderful. So you were introduced to me as Dr. Catherine Francis.
Yeah.
Doctor, so you gave me a little bit about your story. So you started off studying electrical engineering. You are now a doctor of cancer. How did that all, I mean, electrical cancer, there's electrical stuff that happens in the body, but my goodness, that's a big change. What was the change in your life and how did that come about?
Yeah, so I guess there's quite a lot behind that. So, I was, and I guess it sort of goes into my story. So if it's okay, I'll share a bit about that. So I was at university and I was studying electrical engineering. I'd grown up in Coffs Harbour and so my family was still in Coffs and I moved to Sydney to go to university. And in that time when I was studying at uni, that was when my mum was first diagnosed with breast cancer. Right. So she went through her treatment while I was still at uni. So it was an early breast cancer, so she had surgery, chemotherapy, radiation therapy during that time. And I kept going with the electrical engineering and I really enjoyed that and actually worked as an engineer for a few years.
Okay.
But that experience with my mum, I guess, sat in the back of my mind, and in addition to that, I guess we changed a lot and grew up a lot, and I realised that I was actually a closet people person, and whilst I loved science, I also really, really loved people and getting to know people and caring for people, and through my mum I saw how, I guess, special and critical that health journey is, how you know, they're some of the biggest moments in your life, things like getting a cancer diagnosis or even going and seeing the doctor about it, and how you're treated makes all the difference. Yeah. So I ended up applying for medicine so I ended up changing careers, although it's interesting, part of the reason that I've got a bit more free time to do talks like this, well, not free time, but flexible time, is that I've started doing a PhD looking at cancer symptoms, and how to communicate those better. And it's funny, but actually I'm using my electrical engineering again as part of that modelling and computer programming that'll sit behind that. So funny how things work out.
Wow, that's amazing. So you put yourself through another how many years of studying to help others?
Yeah. So the degree itself was 4 years, but you know, it's many years of training after you do the medical degree. So I'm just coming to the end of that now. And I think when I went into it, I didn't think I'd end up in cancer. It felt all a bit too close to home. And I inevitably ended up in tears in any sort of cancer-related lecture or tutorial.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. That's wonderful. So when you, we go back to your mum and her cancer, and like you said, she's passed now. So going through that cancer, and as a young girl, being breast cancer, what did that do to you? How did you deal with that yourself?
Yeah. It was a really, really hard time. I think in the initial diagnosis and through the early stages of the cancer, I didn't really reflect it back to me at all. I think it was, we were just very focused on mum, a bit like how you describe your mum. I mean, my mum was still in her 40s at the time. She was fit, healthy. She didn't drink. She didn't smoke. She didn't do anything. And it just, you know, it doesn't make any sense. And I think I mostly grappled with that, as well as I guess we just tried to be there to support mum. But unfortunately, in my mum's case, the cancer came back quite quickly, and not because of anything she'd done or not done, but just because some cancers are behave really aggressively. And I think at that point, then it became, and then it, she actually went on to further treatment, but then developed brain metastases. At that time, treatment for that wasn't in cough, so she came down to Sydney, but she died from a complication of treating the brain cancers. So it all happened quite quickly and to some degree for us, unexpectedly. And I think that then became very confronting, just trying to navigate life without a mum next to me, starting to question whether, that had implications for my future. And at that stage, genetic testing and that sort of thing wasn't sort of widely done. Now she would have qualified, but then it didn't. So I think, definitely shook everything.
I can imagine. Yeah. And now that you're so involved and you know what you know, people always say, I wish I knew then what I know now. Would that be the case for you? You know, like, I mean, we can't turn back the clock. That if you had known more, would it have and could have had made a difference? I mean, if not to mum, but the family or the extended family?
Yeah. It's hard to know, isn't it? I mean, I think one of the things that I particularly struggled with was that, so for us, it did come as quite a shock. And even though she had cancer that had spread, I don't think we and probably part of it was wanting people around us and our doctors wanting to be positive for a mum who's got young kids. I was the oldest of four, so my brothers and my sister were all younger than me, and both one of my brothers and my sister were still at home. So, I don't think we really had an idea of what to expect. And I remember someone talking to me afterwards being like, oh, well, she had metastatic cancer, like she was always going to die. And like that just came like a ton of, like it was just like, what?
Absolutely.
And obviously for anyone listening, that statement isn't exactly true. So don't take that as a truth. But I guess in my mum's case, now that I know the bigger picture, I can see that it was, you know, a really serious situation, and that she was unlikely to survive, and likely things were going to progress quite quickly. But I think part of the extra grief that we had was because we didn't understand that. And I guess that's something that influences my practice. I also remember someone saying, oh, like at least your mum didn't have to be sad, like at least you know, she you could just have nice times together. And for a while I thought, yeah, no, that's true. But then the more I sat with that, the more I realised that, like, it is painful for it to be sad, but that's because it is. That's what it is. Yes. And actually, like, sitting in that space and being with that is a really important, important thing to do. So I guess if anything, it would have been to give, like, to make space and time to breathe together.
No, certainly that helps. It is depressing, and unfortunately, I mean, you know, now I'm going to just shift a little bit. That is you as a sufferer, as an extended family or a daughter of a mother that's got it. Mm. And now that you're in your doctor's position, how that has shifted. And in between that is Cancer Council, who gives you the support. So I'm going to go to one more question and we'll have a quick break. But now if you put your doctor's hat on, you know, and if I think of a general GP, we go to the GP and he gives you pills and, you got a cold, do this, do that. When you're actually seeing a cancer patient, a soft person going through it, and my mum's listening, and I know that this is almost like, okay, now my time bomb is ticking. You know, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
We're all going to face death no matter what. Like taxes, death is inevitable. But as a doctor with cancer, and if you're seeing people and talking to people, is there a difference in the way that you would treat a cancer patient as a cancer doctor versus just a general GP? Not that one is better than the other, but knowing that there is this time factor now, be it 10 days, 2 years, 10 years, whatever. Do you think there's any difference in that, in treating the patients?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's something that every doctor in nearly all disciplines of medicine will face at some point or other with the person sitting before them. I guess it's more common in the type of doctoring that I'm doing. And I guess the thing I'm acutely aware of is now that, like, what's my everyday is often for the people I'm sitting beside potentially one of the hardest or the worst days of their life. So that definitely, I guess, influences the way that I approach things. I think as well, and partly because of what I've been through, and like what I was saying about, that sort of the appropriateness of grief in these circumstances, I think initially I thought cancer would be, or cancer medicine would just be too difficult for me. But it was actually when I did a term as a probably 3 years after getting my medical degree working as a doctor, I did a rotation working with cancer patients. And I found that actually, contrary to what I thought, that I think because of what I'd gone through with, I knew the importance of sitting with those difficult things and just leaving space for them and actually not running away from or trying to avoid the hard discussions but actually sort of allowing honesty and just seeing the bravery of people as they come to terms with that new reality and move forward in it.
Absolutely. And I can surely say for myself, if this was me and not having somebody this close with cancer, now I have my grandmother, my uncle and my aunt, my mum's brother, all die of cancer, but I wasn't close to them because they went to South Africa and I'm here. I now have my mum, lived all of her life, had the best time ever, and now faced with it. And now what you're saying to me is sharing those moments and making it work, even though I've had her for a long time, and God bless her, and you know, I'm thankful for that. You still want that further life, you know, and it's hard. I think the grief actually starts now, you know, and working towards that. Oh, well, we can go on about that forever. However, let us take a quick break. And when we're going to come back, I'd like you to share one of the stories that you've, that working with patients or helping people within Cancer Council and just their journey and what you have seen and how they've addressed it all. We're going to go to a song by Gabrielle. It's called I Live in Hope. And how appropriate is that for what we're talking about this morning? We're talking to Catherine Francis, a doctor of cancer, Dr. Catherine Francis then, and sharing with us, all because it's still the month of Biggest Morning Tea, where you can jump on and donate. The money is so much needed. Listeners, you have, I'm sure you have a good idea of how it's impacting life right now. Everybody knows somebody that's been through it. Let's listen to Gabrielle, I Live in Hope, and we'll come back to you straight after this. Lovely voice of Gabrielle with a song called I Live in Hope, appropriate for the discussion we're having this morning. It is just up to 10 to 11 o'clock, and we're talking to Catherine Francis, Dr. Catherine Francis, a doctor of cancer. It's all about Australia's Biggest Morning Tea and Yet Alive. We are sitting at, we're not met our target yet, listeners. Lovely to jump on. Our Facebook page will give you the link to it. Jump on there and go and donate. Catherine, we're back with our little chat again. So we're going to share with us a little story about patients or people that you've been assisting or helping, be it just on a, you know, support level or as a doctor. You tell us.
Yeah, Sean.
Yeah.
Sorry. Thanks, Gillian. Yeah. Look, I guess I should start by saying that the stories that I can focus on, I guess, are more related to the support services that Cancer Council provides, but it's helpful for listeners to know that Cancer Council is involved across all areas of cancer, and that includes investing millions of dollars in research and developing many cancer prevention programs, as well as working in advocacy to improve cancer care. And I can think of so many stories, but it's actually hard to choose just one. But I think the one that I'll share with you and with listeners today was a young mum that I looked after who had a diagnosis of an early breast cancer, so breast cancer that could be potentially cured by the treatment, so hopefully, ideally, never come back. Yeah. But she was a mum, and she had one of her children had special needs, and she didn't have a lot of support around her. And so when we met together, we actually met a couple of times because she was really, really uncertain. She had a cancer that the characteristics meant that chemotherapy would improve her chances of survival quite significantly. But she was really frightened about going ahead with chemotherapy because of the side effects and the fear that she wouldn't be able to look after her daughter during that time. And she was really on the edge. In fact, I would say she was pretty sure she was not going to go ahead with chemotherapy. In the end, after one of our conversations, I suggested that she give Cancer Council a call, and they have a free number that can give you access to so many services. That's 131120. And she called that number, and when I saw her the next time, she was a completely different person in a way. She said, look, I've decided to go ahead with treatment, and I sort of asked her, what's changed your mind? And she said when she went on, she actually got put in touch with another young mum who had been through what she'd just been through, what she was about to go through, talked to her about it, about what to expect, also explained, and Cancer Council then further talked about the extra services they could help with, so some home help and some offsetting of some bills during that time. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing that had made the biggest difference was getting to hear from this other lady and hearing that she could do it and she could get through it from someone that she could trust wasn't just trying to make her have treatment unnecessarily. Yeah. And so she went ahead with treatment. She handled it well. I mean, it's never easy, but she got through it and she remains cancer-free at this stage. I've met her daughter on one occasion, which was really special. Mm-hmm. I guess that's just one little story, and I guess what I can share is that I have so many of those little stories of the way that a small difference for a person can actually mean they go ahead with treatment or they get the support they need through that hard time.
That's lovely. I think the biggest thing for people is asking. You know, you're already in a state, and to go and ask, you feel like you even become more helpless, more hopeless. And that's exactly what Cancer Council is there for. I mean, while they're providing the money for the research, they're going to give you the support and anything that you need with what they possibly can do to help you through the process. You know, many people have been there already. So, you know, and each one deals with it differently. So thank you for sharing that story. And I do pray and I hope that people will, if they're going through whatever it is, cancer, whatever illness, and there's people that can support you, please do take up that opportunity to go and ask for some help, because we're never alone in any part of the journey that we're in. We always like to think we are, but there are people there that can support us. So then, you know, let's maybe just jump onto quickly the treatment, like you were talking about treatment. So we all know about chemotherapy and radiation. And I mean, we can talk the other treatment that most people are saying, you know, the one that's going to be legal or not illegal. But in your terms now, with this chemo and the radiation, good or bad, tell us through your studies the reason why we have to do what we do. Like I look at my mum now, you know, she's down for a day or so and then she's up and then she's down. And it's like when you're taking a painkiller. It gets to its peak and then it drops and you've got to start again. Is that the same way chemo works or radiation works?
Oh, look, it's a really hard question to answer, and I guess because there's not just one type of chemo, and so depending on the particular sort of treatment, we call it like regimen or combination of treatment, the effect on a person can be quite different. So some chemotherapy people may only have a few side effects, whereas others can make people very, very unwell. I guess it's always comes down to weighing up what the potential benefit of that treatment is against what the, I mean, the harm or the side effects of the treatment and the way that they impact on the quality of life. And so, for example, in the situation where we are hoping or there's the potential to get rid of the cancer altogether, and if a person's reasonably fit and healthy, then often the treatment might be more intensive, but with that goal of getting rid of it altogether. Whereas if we're dealing with a cancer that we can't get rid of, but that we're trying to control, obviously finding treatment that finds that balance between controlling the cancer so you don't get symptoms from the cancer, but also, you know, minimizing any side effects from the treatment so that you're not feeling miserable all the time, but you can actually enjoy those extra days, months, years that you're being given and use them to do the things that matter to you. Does that answer your question?
That certainly does. And I mean, it makes sense now because, I mean, just, and I have to come back to, because my experience now that what we are going through, and it was like, Mama says, I don't want to do it, because she saw her sister go through it and what it did. And it came to a decision like, what is it that you want, Mom? Where do we go with this? Extended life? Because really, to me, that's what it gives you. A comfort extended, however long it may be. And if you don't do that, we have to try alternative measures. And it just makes it so much worse. I think the worst thing with cancer is pain, from what I understand and what people go through. And if this is going to minimize pain, that's wonderful. You know, we can, like I said, we can go on talking about it, but I do appreciate you taking the time sharing. And I think we've been lucky this morning, because not only are you an ambassador for Cancer Council, but you're then, your studies has helped us understand something more than just the support that Cancer Council gives to people. So I do thank you for that valuable information. And, you know, anybody going through cancer, the extended family suffers too. Once people are in your, with Cancer Council as well, they've done their treatment and they're getting that, Cancer Council offers support for the family after the person, the patient has passed too? Do they do that as well? Hello? Oh, we've lost her. We've dropped out there.
Okay. Hello.
Hi.
I'm here.
Sorry, you there? Sorry, I was just asking if Cancer Council helps support the family of any cancer person that has passed after they pass. Do they continue, or up until a certain time, still give them that support?
Yeah. So, I was going to say, I think you made a really good point earlier about that idea that, you know, grief starts almost at the time of diagnosis. I think at the time of diagnosis, and family members and carers, those around the person going through the diagnosis are also, you know, as you know, it's a really tough time for them as well. And I think it's really important for the people around the cancer. Like, it's hard enough for people going through that cancer diagnosis to reach out for help, although I really encourage anyone to do that. But I think it's often even harder for carers, because they just feel like, look, it's not about me. I don't even have, like, I'm not the one with the cancer, you know, I'm being selfish or I'm being kind of self-indulgent. But I would argue that it's really important for anyone to reach out and get support, and it's understandably a really hard time, but also that you being well and going through that process as well as you can enables you to be the best support for the person with the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And Cancer Council services are definitely available for everyone, not just the person with cancer. And that extends, I mean, I can't imagine that they would ever say, oh, no, it's been too long, you know. You can't. Like, that extends anyone who wants to reach out and speak to someone. They've got, like, health professionals, they've got oncologists like me, they've also got everyday people who've, like, gone, well, I'm also an everyday person, but they've got people who've gone through it themselves. They've got a whole lot of resources that are definitely, definitely available for anyone, not just for someone who can say, I've had the diagnosis. So, yeah, definitely make use of those and don't feel any shame about it. I think often we underestimate how much we're holding and carrying when we're there supporting someone else through something so difficult.
And when, you know, I always say a problem shared is a problem just kind of not, it's released, and you don't have to carry it by yourself. So listeners, thank you for joining us this morning. Catherine, it's been wonderful talking to you.